seated. All right, our only case at 10:30 is Sturmer versus State. Ms. Spezak, if you'll introduce counsel.
May it please the court, we will argue for appellant. Ms. Andrea Simmons will argue for the state.
Mr. Houghton.
Thank you, Your Honor. My comments will be relatively short on this case. This is not a complex case at all, although the record is pretty convoluted, as the court, I'm sure, is aware. But this case is a case of what I have characterized repeatedly of one of fundamental error and substantial error in this case, in which Mr. Sturmer, having difficulties with his counsel, and then difficulties with making up his mind about whether he wants to accept the plea or not, the jury's brought in, and he pleads guilty in front of the jury, and then they go ahead and have a trial. In this case, as the court is aware, he was involved in plea negotiations just moments before this. The court told him just moments before this that he could, if he wanted the 8 years to be sure, words to that effect, that he could accept the plea. As the court is aware, Mr. Sturmer then faltered on that, but he never exactly refused the deal. He didn't accept it. He was explaining to the court at that point why he was having difficulty making his mind up. The court called in the jury. They read the indictment, and then very quickly after that, Mr. Sturmer entered his plea of guilty. Our position in this case is, Justices, that Mr. Sturmer believed that by entering his plea of guilty at that stage in the case, that he could still get the 8-year deal that he believed was on the table. And a review of the record certainly doesn't indicate that anybody withdrew that. Now, it may have been the intention of the court, it may have been the intention of the prosecution to withdraw that, not allow him to take that deal, but certainly in Mr. Sturmer's mind, and I think reasonably so after reading the record, he believed it was still available to him to accept.
But when you look at the entire transaction, as far as once he was in front of the trial judge, I mean, it is clear at the beginning there's some misunderstanding, but the judge does come back and say, no, if you get a trial, there's no deal. So do you want a trial or not?
In fact, he says, his lawyer says, you have either the 8 years or this trial, stated on the record deal. On the record right now, are you going to take the 8 years or are we going to trial?
I understand that. Mr. Zelmer had difficulty getting a firm answer one way or the other out of his client. And I was not present for the trial, but I can only imagine, what they were all going through in the circumstance. However, Mr. Sturmer never specifically refused that offer. And the fact that the judge then interjected at that point and said, well, bring in the jury, we're going to have a trial. Mr. Sturmer never consented to that. He never agreed to it. He never specifically refused.
Does he have the opportunity to consent or not?
From the reading of the record, it doesn't appear he did. And I don't know how quickly these statements were bouncing back and forth between them. But it sounds as though, from the reading of the record, that he did not have an opportunity at that point to say, wait a minute, I don't want to try, It just sort of took off without him.
How about this comment by the trial judge? If you continue to the trial, you may be found guilty. You may be found not guilty. If you are found guilty, there is no deal. I may give you 8 years. I may give you more than 8 years. I may give you less than 8 years. If you want a guaranteed deal, 8 years is on the table. And that, either accept it or not.
Right.
And so he squirreled around and says he's never fought for anything. He did not want to anger the trial judge. And so the trial judge says, bring in the jury. We're going to have a trial.
I mean, if you draw this to its logical conclusion, then, the jury could be deliberating, and he could say, I think I'll take the 8 years now. Well, seems to me that there has to be a bright line when it's off the table. Either the prosecutor says it's off the table now, or we start trial, because that's his choice. Take the 8 years, or we start trial. And he started trial, and if that's not the bright line, then there isn't a bright line. It could be somewhere during the trial he stands up, I've decided take it.
And I understand it would certainly be nice if we had a bright line rule that we could all point to and say, okay, we're done. But I don't see that we have one. And the problem that we have here is if he had waited until we were all the way back at jury deliberation, then I think it would be a lot clearer than it is now. But sort of on that continuum, he did it just as the court was asking him for his plea again, which to him, from the reading of the record again, sounds as though, okay, I don't want this trial. I want to take the deal. I'm jumping ship right now. I'm going to take what they've offered me. And the problem is that after all those comments, the court says, you're not angering me. He begins to explain some more. I'm very sorry. I've never fought for anything. Then the court says, bring the jury in. We're going to have a trial. And that's where he is, I think, at that point, kind of finds himself swept into the context of having a jury trial rather than being able to take the plea agreement.
Can we tell if the jury was sworn?
Your Honor, I don't have that record with me.
We just read what's on page 8 of your brief. We're going to have a trial. Go have a seat. May I approach? They read the indictment. If they read the indictment, I thought I read, but maybe they didn't do that.
They did, Your Honor.
Okay. I'm just saying if the jury was never sworn, the trial hadn't begun, in my view, and I can't read from this little discussion here if that had happened.
My understanding is that they had been sworn.
All right.
And certainly I don't recall reading in the record where they were sworn at any point after this. So I'm assuming they had been sworn in even before all of this conversation before the court out of the presence of the jury. But, Your Honor, then he finds himself in the position of trying to plead guilty and take this deal. Now, certainly something that should have happened at the trial court, should have been some clarification with the defendant before he entered that plea, or as he was trying to enter that plea, to say, hey, this is not a deal. You don't have a deal here. This is an open plea. You're throwing yourself, on the mercy of the court here. But that was never done. And when we discuss the failure of the court to admonish him in this plea, I'm not talking about purely technical omissions or minor omissions. I'm talking about something as significant as whether he believes he's going to get the 8-year deal or he's going to be left up to the court where the court is going to sentence him. So a substantive omission there. And with that in mind, I don't see how his plea before the jury under the circumstances could be voluntary. If he knew and understood exactly what the effect of that plea was going to be, then certainly, we could say it's voluntary, but that's not the case here. And then, of course, he's taken on into trial. So then the assertion that, well, they had the trial anyway, so any defect at this point would have been cured by the trial, certainly doesn't carry any weight, because the trial, I don't think any of us could look at what happened in the case after the judge said, we have a slight technicality, you're not quite released, we're going to have to go ahead and have a trial here. And then they put on some evidence and they have the trial for the jury. I think certainly eliminates any corrective action that going forward and having the jury trial with the same jury would have had. It just doesn't correct anything here. And so certainly I believe that under the circumstances, Mr. Sturmer didn't get the benefit of a plea, and he certainly didn't get the benefit of a trial before a fair and impartial jury, certainly after those comments were made.
What evidence do we have that appellant didn't understand the plea? I mean, did you have a hearing on the motion for new trial?
There was no hearing on that, Your Honor.
Because I see there was one filed.
There was one.
And it was denied by written order, so.
Okay. Yes, Your Honor, that's right. All we have is the record.
Okay.
But I think from the record, it's reasonably easy to infer from what happened and sort of the normal, you know, experience that we all have, that Mr. Sturmer, because his guilty plea follows so closely on the heels of the judge's comment about you can plea and get 8 years or you can go to trial and I'll sentence you somewhere within the statutory range, it comes so close on the heels of those comments that we can infer from that he was attempting to take advantage of what the judge had laid out before him, his buffet of choices here. And so that, I think, is sufficient enough for this court to draw that inference from the record that we have before us. And I think that's going to be the essence of my opening remarks then.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Houghton. Ms. Simmons.
Good morning, counsel.
Good morning.
This is a bit of a confusing case. I'd like to start off by saying that Mr. Sturmer, his defense to the crime that he was charged with was basically that he was confused then. He couldn't register as a sex offender because he was confused. He's done it before, but it was confusing this time. He didn't understand. He's not getting the fair treatment. And then he goes into the courtroom where he's been before, goes through plea bargains, which he admits he's accepted before, and pretends he also is confused and doesn't understand what's happening. And that's now his defense on appeal. I was confused of the crime I was convicted of. I was confused in the courtroom. I'm confused now. It's a constant defense of his regarding any activity Mr. Sturmer's been doing. And this trial and the chaos that occurred in there is an example of exactly how he has been acting in the instant case that got him in the situation to begin with. But first of all, he would not answer. And I'll agree with the questions that you were asking. The judge specifically was tried to help Mr. Sturmer and told him, I can't give you legal advice. I can't get into client privilege with your attorney, but here's what's going on. You have an 8-year plea offer. You know, you can take it or you can go to trial. I'm going to give you some time to think about it even. You know, go back out, calm down, think about it. Let's do this. He came back in, still would not accept the 8 plea or make a decision. The judge specifically told him, you can either do this, you can have this plea bargain of 8 years, you can have it right now, or you can go to trial. When we bring a jury in, there's no plea offer. And he began to ramble again, and the judge had specifically said, okay, jury trial it is. He just said, if we go to a jury trial, there's no plea offer.
Where does he say that exactly?
On the trial judge said Sturmer could go to trial.
Tell me where. I'm reading. Is it in the brief?
Yeah.
Or if it's not in the brief, then go ahead.
But. Yes, it's in the brief. It should be on the...
Should be on page 7 or 8, I would think. It says, bring the jury in. We're going to have a trial. Go have a seat, Mr. Sturmer. I don't see where he flatly says, I mean, I can read it, as we've already discussed, to imply that.
Let me grab the record here.
You can have 8 years. On the record, his lawyer tells him, on the record right now, are you going to take the 8 years or are we going to trial? Mr. Sturmer, do you want to finish the trial or do you want to do the plea bargain?
Okay. The court said, we are not going to force you to do anything. If you continue to trial, you may be found guilty, you may be found not guilty. If you are found guilty, there is no deal.
If you're found guilty, there is no deal, okay? Not says if we're going to start the trial, it's off the table.
Okay, well, then I may be...
In fact, if I was defense counsel, I would be seizing on that statement by the judge that says, if you were found guilty, there is no deal. That almost sounds like that we've got to go through a trial.
And I'm trying to backtrack here because my notes here, I actually referred to the record instead of my brief, so did it backwards. But on page 9 of volume 3 of the reporter's record, the court said... the defendant saying, I didn't know what was going on. The court said, well, you know it now. Mr. Sturmer, you know it now. do you want some time to think about it? But you're not going to have all day. I mean, if you want to go sit down and think about it, pray about it, do whatever it is for whatever, for 10 to 15 minutes, I'll give you that amount of time. At the end of that time, we're bringing the jury back in. We're either going to proceed with a trial or we're going to proceed with a plea bargain. Plea bargain or trial. After he comes back in and stutters around and doesn't make a choice, the judge specifically says, bring the jury in. We're going to have a trial. He already pointed out that it's a trial or a plea bargain. When he said we're having a trial, the judge has rejected the offer, the plea bargain offer that was on the table by the state, which Mr. Sturmer refused to either accept or refuse. So the trial court at that decision rejected the plea offer by stating, bring the jury in, we're having a trial. And I believe that Mr. Sturmer was represented by counsel, and they were both aware of what the judge was doing when he brought that. He already told them, if you go to trial, there's no plea bargain. So when he said, we're going to trial, it's obvious that he's telling them the plea bargain is now off the table. So when Mr. Sturmer then, everyone's belief is at that point that we're going forward with a jury trial and that he's going to plead not guilty. He then pleads guilty, which throws everybody off a little bit on what just happened with our proceedings once again, and everybody's caught off guard. He's not pleading guilty to the plea bargain agreement. He's just pleading. He's doing his same stunt that he's been doing all morning, which is get up and confuse everybody and start causing chaos again. And he was going in that morning to plead not guilty. Then he wanted a plea bargain offer, then he didn't. Then the judge said, fine, you can't get it. So then he stood up and did the exact opposite of what he was supposed to do all morning and said, I plead guilty. And he apologizes for wasting everybody's time. At that point, what should have happened is this should have become a unitary proceeding. He's pleading guilty. We should have gone on to a unitary proceeding. From my looking at the record, it appears that there was some confusion on everyone's part on what's happening. And I actually would say that the confusion regarding whether to go forward with the bifurcated or unitary was the state's confusion, because the state makes a statement to the court saying, I don't think it's enough to go forward on only his plea of guilty. I think we have to have more. And so I think at that point when we move forward, that was the state's misunderstanding, that prosecutor's misunderstanding, that we were going to have to present some kind of evidence. But as the courts have held, moving on with a bifurcated proceeding rather than a unitary is not reversible error. If anything, he got the advantage of having a jury listen to the evidence, which he was not entitled to because he had already entered a plea of guilty.
So your position then is that technically what should have happened at that point is the trial judge should have just directed the jury to enter that verdict and then immediately proceed with punishment.
Exactly.
Okay.
It should have automatically become a unitary proceeding. No evidence should have been heard. They should have been directed to give their verdict, released, and then move on to the punishment phase, where she had elected that the trial court sentence. So that's the phase that it should have gone on to next. But of course, the record continues to be confusing because we do the exact opposite and go forward and start presenting evidence. And in there is where we have the admonishment issue of at the end of them saying, hey, wait a minute, you know, he didn't know what range of punishment he was facing, because when he pled guilty, he should have been admonished. And I agree with that. And what happened here goes back to the confusion of we started this with an expectation of a plea of not guilty. He changed the events around by pleading guilty. The state then got confused, went on with the bifurcated instead of a unitary proceeding. But if you go back to everything before this trial started, it was obvious that Mr. Sturmer was aware of what he was facing. He had a plea offer agreement of 2 years prior, which him and his attorney had discussed. The morning of trial, he had a plea offer of 8 years. Him and his attorney discussed that. And when he was talking to the judge about his confusion, he said, you know, I'm scared to death. I'm going to get 99 years. And he knew that he was facing what the punishment range was that he was facing. He knew what was going on. He was just continuing to duck and hide around the procedures by confusing everyone in the courtroom. But when you get down to it, any errors that did occur were harmless. And the court did as much as they could in this instance to make sure that he knew what he was pleading guilty to. They gave him every opportunity to take that 8 years. If the court has no further questions, the state would rest.
Thank you, Ms. Simmons. Mr. Houghton?
Thank you. Well, just a couple of things. Number one, I don't think from the record, certainly, that it was clear to Mr. Sturmer that the offer was being withdrawn. Those comments occurred earlier in this transaction, and if we look at the conversation that centers around his decision, immediately around his decision to plead guilty, it does sound as though he still has that option available to him. And at least in his mind, if we're looking first at the voluntariness of his plea, what's in his mind is important to us. If he believes he's pleading guilty and that he's going to get an 8-year deal, because that's been the deal that's been on the table all morning for him, then certainly a plea that turns into an open plea for which he gets almost double time is not voluntary.
But then, your position sort of is, from his standpoint, why am I being asked again how do I plead if this still isn't on the table?
Exactly. And then the other problem we have is that if, in fact, we find that this is a voluntary plea, then the other problem we've got is then we proceed on into a trial. And the trial was no benefit to Mr. Sturmer, because the trial, under these circumstances, really should have been nothing more than just, enter a finding. Instead, we went forward, we put on evidence, we had the full-blown trial in this case, but then that raises the second point that we have, that we've raised in our brief, which is that if this is a trial, then it wasn't a fair trial. It couldn't have been a fair trial, not after the comments of the court, not after, Mr. Sturmer's plea of guilty in front of the jury and then going forward to a full trial certainly didn't give him any benefit. Certainly not any benefit any more than just a straight-up guilty plea would have given him, because there was no realistic possibility that the jury was going to find him not guilty under these circumstances.
But wouldn't it have been interesting if the jury had?
We talked about that this morning.
We would have a different dilemma on our hands.
I've seen it go the other way, but I've not seen it.
Giving him 99.
But
your second point is predicated on the first point. Because if we find that he did meaningfully plead guilty, the fact that he got a jury trial didn't harm him.
Right.
So you need to prevail on point one to get to point two, right? So, what is the point of point two? Because if we get to point one and decide that it wasn't a meaningful plea and the proceeding was wrong, then we don't get to point two. And if we find that it wasn't a meaningful plea of guilty, then we don't get to point two either. So,
Your Honor, that's why I've been losing hair over this one, because okay, the record is relatively simple, but the issues, because of the way they interact with one another, make it a little more difficult, a little more challenging. But in the long and the short of it is that Mr. Sturmer thought he was getting the plea deal. I think it's obvious from the record. And the fact that we have two seasoned prosecutors who are completely bum-fuzzled in this circumstances, but then we want to argue that, well, they may have been confused about what was going on and some of the processes involved, but Mr. Sturmer certainly should have clearly understood what was happening to him right here. And so I think, Your Honor, I'd ask the court at a minimum, certainly, to remand this back to the trial court, and if so Mr. Sturmer could get the benefit of that plea bargain. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel, your case is submitted. We appreciate your arguments and your briefing today, and appreciate you coming to Fort Worth. That concludes our 10:30 docket and concludes our cases for today. If the clerk will now adjourn us.